ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Hi Krishna everybody, so welcome to this program. I just wanted to now quickly introduce all the Sankirtan leaders who we have here. So firstly thank you Kesha Prabhu and Kalavati Mataji for hosting this program. Like last year, it's become like what is a legacy. Every year we will have, looks like the Shiva Sangam will be here. We will be meeting with all the confidential associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu right in here with Guru Maharaj, which is nice. So we have obviously Amanda Vikrama Prabhu, who is representing Ireland and doing some services there and wanting to also expand Sankirtan in Ireland. So he's with us, our dear godbrother. So welcome Prabhu. We then have Rishi Prabhu, who is heading our sacred street party for Pandasena. So Haribol for him. So Rishi Prabhu is a very young, dynamic, very enthusiastic Sankirtan leader. Really evolving sacred street party, and it's growing day by day. So really happy to have you here, Rishi Prabhu. Thank you for all what you do. Thank you so much. We have Keshav Gokulananda Prabhu and Kalavati Mataji, who are the door-to-door leaders here at the Bhaktivedanta Manor congregation. And they've done some great work over the last year and a half or so. And door-to-door Sankirtan has really evolved. I mean, the way it's organized and the maps and things, and especially monthly Sankirtan festival, everybody knows what's happening. So there's a lot of hard work which they do behind the scene and also on the street. So thank you, Prabhu and Mataji, for your continued hard work. Mataji, can you remind me your name?
Surabhi Kunj.
We have Surabhi Kunj Mataji, who is representing South Africa Sankirtan Party. Is it Durban Temple? So thank you for coming.
Just a fly on the wall.
That's okay. We were all fly on the wall, and we're still fly on the wall. We're all learning. So thank you for coming. We have Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu, who's a legendary, wonderful devotee, who's taking care of Matsyadev, serving Matsyadev wholeheartedly, and trying to expand the vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. So thank you for coming, Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu. Very happy to have you here. We have Vindarika Ramaya Devidasi, who's trying to help with Kids Sankirtan here at the, with the Manor congregation, also the Kids Sangha. So thank you for coming. We have Raksha Mataji, who is representing us from the Bhakti Viksha Northwest London team. She is a Sankirtan leader for the Bhakti Viksha Northwest London team. And they are just starting to evolve the whole Sankirtan. And now she will be working on the summer marathon with us. So thank you for coming and taking your time out this evening. We then have Nitin Prabhuji and Mataji, your name? Kaushika Mataji, who are both instrumental in many parts of Sankirtan, but mainly Nitin Prabhu is helping Radha Dasi Mataji in evolving the Gita project. Apart from that, he was really instrumental in setting the retreat for us and the whole, you know, from registration all the way to the end for the climax. So thank you, Nitin Prabhu. That was very, very nice of you. Thank you very much. We then have Sridham and Yash, who are part of the kids party. So we'd like to welcome both of you. Please come in. Thank you. And then we have Sachi and Nandapriya also, who are part of this Sankirtan party. She's been going out ever since she was like maybe 6 months or something. Even earlier, well, 2-3 months she was out on the street doing Sankirtan. Well, before that, even when before she was born, because as you say Maharaj, you know, there are devotees who are carrying the children and yet they are going out in Sankirtan. So thank you so much, Guru Maharaj, yet again for coming and gracing this occasion and inspiring us. So we'll request to hear something from Maharaj, and then we will open up to question and answers from the various Sankirtan leaders. So thank you. Welcome. Let's put out three loud Haribols to welcome Guru Maharaj and Guru Maharaj. Haribol!
Haribol!
We have a couple of more devotees joining soon, Guru Shakti Mataji and Dipteshwar Prabhu, who is helping follow-up team. And then we will also have Chandrika Mataji, where we had the program yesterday, will be joining us a bit later.
I offer my respectful obeisances to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to all of you, because you are Vaishnavas, and therefore are the most worshipable in the three worlds, Hare Krishna. That's all right. Because in the leaders' meeting, when the phone rings, it's important business. And it's all important business. The taking the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most consequential of all endeavors that one can make in life. There are lots of ways to spend time, and no matter who we are, we will spend time doing something. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nahi kashchit shanam api jatu tischetya karma krit karyate hyavasha karma sarva prakriti jayar gunai. And that is that living entities are always active. It's their nature. And there are lots of things that will call to us through our senses, through our sense of ego, of who we are. And we see all over the world, people are engaged in some kind of endeavor. They work hard. This morning I went for a walk in the morning and I saw people running fast to catch little vehicles here and there and moving to go to their work spaces. And I was wondering if they had actually considered why they were working. Why are they getting on a trolley or getting in a little bus to go to some place that they don't even like anyway? And oftentimes people don't give much thought to why they're working, why they're moving. They just move. And therefore, the Shastra says, think about why you're moving and what's the ultimate goal of life. And then move towards that. And then, as Narada says in his teachings to Vyasadeva, everything you do becomes a source of liberation. The same kind of work that everybody else does when they're running for vehicles, they're working extra hours. When it's performed to please Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then it becomes a source of liberation. And the best kind of work that one can do, according to the mood and method of our sampradaya, is to live amongst the people of the world who have collectively been misled and who have subscribed to a kind of mass trance, thinking, for instance, I just came from Italy, and people think that pizza is an Italian thing. In fact, what does it mean to be Italian anyway? Just born in a certain type part of the world, but they think our thing is pizza. Well, who thought of that? It's just a concoction. I mean, no offense to pizza or Italians, but everybody does it, and everyone thinks this is important. And it's not really, it's actually a mental concoction. But what comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not a concoction. Everything else is. The Srimad Bhagavatam says, Ritertam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyaratmano mayam yatabhaso yatatamaha. Anything that you do or see in this world that doesn't have a relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, know that to be maya, illusion. And you can't be happy in illusion, and you can't be progressive in illusion, no matter how hard you work. But when you work for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, every little thing that you do has an eternal beneficial consequence. And therefore, it's the most important work in the world. Of course, big enterprises often start in very small ways. Where else would they start? Somebody has an idea and a little bit of impetus to get it done, and they'll meet someplace like this, a little sunroom somewhere. Nobody knows what's going on, but they're bringing out their ideas, they're writing them on paper, they're dividing into groups, deciding who will do what, and this begins an enterprise. And as they continue, these entrepreneurial spirited people, they begin to make progress by filling in the gaps. They get some fortuitous breezes in their life, and their enterprise turns out to be something substantial. And in the same way, those who are connected to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they meet in little sunrooms like this, in neighborhoods, nobody knows what's going on practically. But the consequence is huge, because by deciding, first of all, that it's a worthwhile cause to invest one's energy, and then organizing behind it, deciding who will do what, how to do it better the next time, and getting the favorable breezes, the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who helps us, we can develop something that is beneficial for the whole world. Parupakar, that was the idea of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, use your energy to do good for others. But first of all, learn what it means to do good for others. When Srila Prabhupada came to America, it looked very inconsequential because he didn't have any resource and resources. He had a red-hot intention, however, to fulfill the purpose of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through his, which came to him through his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura. And that's where it really starts. So I found in meeting with groups all over the world that by coming together and discussing the importance of the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, understanding why it's important, why is the holy name potent, what is it, what is the theology behind it. For instance, Narada Muni says to Vyasadeva, iti murtya abhidanena mantra murtya mamurtikam yajite yagya purusham sasam yag darshana puman, that by taking the holy name one can actually have the complete darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is the only source of ultimate satisfaction for any living entity. And that's something that we're delivering and offering, along with instructions about how to organize one's life in such a way that one can stay in contact constantly with Krishna. So when there's a will and there's a intention to expand the Sankirtan movement, then comes meeting together, talking about ways in which to organize. And from there, there's viable service that devotees can do. Everyone can help in the Sankirtan movement. When the thrust is towards distributing books, that becomes very practical, because anyone can prove that the distribution of literature is effective. It's what has implanted various ideologies in the world, the distribution of literature. It is what actually sustains the human spirit, is what comes through the literature of the world. And it's a highly effective means of spreading a movement, spreading an ideology, and giving people help. They can take books, they can read them, and then having a way to accommodate people once they get those books, once they get the knowledge and information and develop an interest, decide that they can come to and take advantage of the teachings and learn from others. This becomes a holistic process. And really that's how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu envisioned the world would be inundated with Krishna consciousness through this kind of work that you're doing here, organizing in back rooms, in neighborhoods where people live, and then finding ways to engage more people, and finding ways to accommodate the people when they come. This is an all-encompassing idea. It can take considerable time and effort, but it's all worth it. So this is in the UK, a growing enterprise, because you have the will of the leaders here throughout the UK. You have a lot of very vibrant communities where there are advanced devotees who have dedicated their lives. And you have a very practical service, book distribution. It's easy to count books too. There's so many that come in a case. At the end of the day, you can count how many are left. And when you sell books also, it resembles a kind of business in the material world where, you know, there's buying and selling and so forth. It makes sense to people. Oh, you have a product, you make it available, people buy it, you bring back the money and you reinvest it. And so it's practical. It's very practical and very countable. So it's exciting in that way. You can develop an enterprise. And it's really satisfying when you're able to work from a group, cooperate, and then develop. And then you can count how have we increased. Of course, there's lots of ways to count how we've increased. Many of the ways are qualitative, not necessarily quantitative. The degree to which the devotees are feeling satisfied. I often say, and it's become a mantra lately, that it's not so important what we do as how we do it. Because ultimately, we can always increase more and more. And in the scheme of the whole universe and how many living entities there are, it'll remain somewhat insignificant. But when this quality, due to the right sense of purpose and working together with humble hearts and in a cooperative spirit, when this is attended to, when the devotees are doing things in the proper way, this is very important and consequential also. So there's a lot to consider in these kinds of meetings and as we execute the service of expanding book distribution. I really like the various divisions. When Divyananda Prabhu was introducing all of you, there's a sense of people having responsibility for a particular branch. That's the very meaning of organization. Like there's organs in the body that make the whole thing work. And when everyone has a clear idea of what their particular service is and how it fits with everybody else and it works synergistically, then it becomes more and more powerful. I was listening to Romapad Maharaj this morning because he happens to be at ISV, so I just saw he was live on Facebook. And I listened in for a little while, and he was saying to the devotees at ISV that because, you know, you've worked together in a certain way, there's a consequence. And it spreads from one area, and it can go far and wide, because when the intention is right and you work together, it's something you can export. And it can have worldwide implications. It's something you can export. It's not that, you know, what happens in this little sunroom here is insignificant. The thought processes towards expanding book distribution and accommodating people after they get the books, when it's organized and enacted, then it takes on a kind of power. It brings out the power of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and that's something that starts to affect people all over the world. So as I see the leaders here and more leaders arriving at every moment, you know, feeling that this party here in the UK is definitely growing and expanding, and more as I come each year, I'm seeing that there's a sense of purpose that is emerging. That is not just amongst the book distributors and those who are organizing, all of you who are doing this, but also in the leadership throughout the UK. It's more and more acknowledgement of the importance of reviving book distribution and making this a priority. Of course, there have been many parties that have come and gone. There have been parties that have arisen out of a sense of urgency, a sense of let's spread the Sankirtan movement, And then for one reason or another, they've dwindled. And there have been patterns, you know, coming and going and things like that. So it's important also to look at the past. What has the history been? What are the delimiting factors? Ways in which parties have grown, but then they've been diminished by either an attitude or a major gap in the program. Or, for instance, there was a time in history when there was consideration that, well, book distribution is good because it creates a lot of income. But then the next step is, well, I mean, why don't we just get the income and forget the books? Because there's other ways to make money. So then we'll sell something else. But then we'll have virtual books. In other words, we intend to spend the money for books later, but we're just not distributing them. And by degrees, you can start to slip off into expedient ways in which to fulfill some kind of desire for money or whatever, and forget the real core purpose. I've seen also devotees set up tables in various places around the world, and then they noticed, oh, people like to buy the incense. Oh, what about pictures? What about, soap and a rope? Whatever you want to put up on there. And next thing you know, all the books are on the side and all the other stuff. You might as well start a Walmart somewhere and just sell all kinds of stuff. But that's not why we're doing it. It's a kind of sadhana, it's a devotion to present books on their own merit and to use our natural ingenuity and the genius that we get from Krishna when we're sincerely trying to actually present the books for our own purification. All these things have to be kept in balance. Otherwise, a party can grow. And if it's based on artificial values or anarthas, then the program can develop weakness and actually morph into something that's not so desirable. So it requires remembering what our real values are and keeping true to the spirit of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, presenting Krishna consciousness as it is to people, and also being really preoccupied with hearing and chanting from the very books that we're distributing. As Prabhupada told many of his disciples, he told me personally in San Francisco, I've not written these books just for selling. I've written them for you to read, to become pure devotees, and to go back home, back to Godhead. And that has to be an integral part of the Sankirtan, is emphasizing japa, meditation, and also hearing and chanting together, actually getting a taste for Bhagavatam. And when that's there, then the magic happens, that we're depending on Krishna. I see that all the time at ISV. I've seen it over the years. Devotees set goals and they're wondering, how's this ever going to happen? It doesn't look like it'll happen at all. But they have no other choice except to go forward and depend on Lord Chaitanya. And every single time, Lord Chaitanya makes some arrangement that is beyond what we could have imagined. And then the devotees develop more faith because they see that, oh, we're not doing it. We're the instruments. I heard Prabhupada just yesterday in a lecture. He said that if a man hits somebody and hurts them with a stick, then the stick isn't responsible. They don't take the stick to court and say, why'd you do that? So then he said, we should become a stick for Krishna. Let Krishna use us whatever way that he wishes, become the instrument. And if this is the intention of our Sankirtan party, that we're working to fulfill the will of Krishna, we're his instruments, then where's the fear? And we simply act to the best of our ability to fulfill his desire. And that's really the purpose of life. What could be better than that? So it's an important time in history right now. There's a lot of change going on in the world. And it's altogether possible to develop worldwide a force, meaning an organization of Vaishnavas who rise up and organize together to inundate the world with Krishna conscious literature. I mean, that's one aspect that is entirely practical. There is a way in which right now we can count how many units we're distributing, how many books are going out, and then say, let's do 20% more, let's do 100% more, let's do 1,000% more. It's doable. It can be done, and it can be done right from this sunroom here, and little sunrooms all over the UK and all over Europe and all over the world. And sharing best practices, working as a team, and keeping this common goal for global dominance. I once heard during a political campaign, one of the pollsters said, whoever rules the airwaves wins. And so we have to rule the airwaves. There's a lot of nonsense flying around the world and people are being affected by it. But when they hear Bhagavad Gita as it is, then they're summarily yanked out of the material world and into the spiritual world. That's parupakara. That's real good for people in general. So this party is growing. Every year we've seen the growth. And let's attend to the part about hearing and chanting and working together to find ways to improve hearing and chanting. Human relations are important. The way we treat one another as we're expanding is extremely important. We won't develop the attitude that the project is more important than the devotees that are involved. There's a way in which you can be so preoccupied with building something that the people who are building it become expendable. And, you know, let's grind them up and put them in the mortar so we... No, we have to realize that, you know, devotees are extremely valuable and they're beloved of Krishna, and therefore we have to treat them with the utmost respect. That can never be sacrificed for the sake of expansion and the movement. And if hearing and chanting is attended to properly as a sacred duty and the way in which to have communion with Krishna constantly, and also we have a sense of respect for each individual. Prabhupada said that you should create an environment in which devotees do service that's individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. That was his mood. That's extraordinary in a leader. Prabhupada was so highly enlightened in every aspect of management, of spiritual teachings, and he gave us these paradigms to live by. Create an environment in which devotees do service as individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. Make room for people's genius. I mean, even an earthworm has genius. I watch it all the time. You know, they're like, where are you going? And it's like, I know what I'm doing. I'm a living entity. Even though I'm in a worm body. What to speak of human beings? They're really smart and creative. And even if they look, to me, if they look debilitated, I should think again, because if somebody has some devotion, even a drop of devotion, they'll want to express it. So create a space for people in the party so they can express their individual devotion to Krishna. And then make it spontaneous. If you force people into stuff, then later on they reconsider. I've seen it so many times. People have sold books in ways that the people come back. I've done it. And you know, later on they come back and say, I want my money back. But we're meant to evolve and learn how to treat people in such a way that they're, even as they're buying a book from us, they're expressing their individual will to do so. And it's not by force or coercion. And within the party, it should be like that within the devotional community, making space for people to do spontaneous service, bringing it out of them. Fanning the spark. When you see an individual initiative, somebody wants to do something, encourage them. fan the spark and let it come out. Individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. And, you know, that voluntary spirit, we're all volunteers. Prabhupada used to remind us that. In any power structure, it's easy enough for those in power to want to stay in power. In fact, it's called Michael's Iron Laws of Oligarchy. He proved, Michael's, that when people get in power, when they have some false ego, then instead of doing their job, they use 99% of their energy just to stay in power. And we've also seen in the Stanford experiment, which many of you have probably read about, it was a sociological experiment when some people were put in charge of others. They synthesized a prison atmosphere. The prison guards, even in this simulated environment, they became abusive. They had to stop the experiment. So this is something that we have to be aware of, that everyone's a volunteer. Everyone should be respected and encouraged to do voluntary service. We can't dominate others or, you know, force them to do things. And that takes finesse. And that finesse comes from spiritual enlightenment. So it's a spiritual movement we're involved in. And even though it may resemble enterprise, like a material enterprise, like building up, selling more units, expanding in different places, empowering people, it has a similar form and shape as other kinds of businesses do that you can learn about in business school. But even within those secular businesses, they're realizing that you have to consider the human spirit. They have to consider it less because a lot of people have visa problems and they'll work as slave labor for 10 years or they want to get paid, so they'll do, but there's a limit to that. But within our organization, it's all volunteerism. So we have to completely consider that, how to accommodate people's sense of voluntary service. Individual, spontaneous, voluntary. And then Prabhupada said, always create a fresh challenge. Fresh. Sridham, can you get a dictionary and look up the word fresh, please? Create a fresh challenge so that everybody will want to rise up and meet it. That's where real happiness is in a Sankirtan movement, when people are moving towards a worthy goal. And if you create a fresh challenge for people, they want to move up, then it's always exciting, because that's what fresh means, as we'll see in a minute. If they can get it together and get a dictionary. Okay, Sridham. Hey, look at that. Oxford, what is it? Advanced. Okay, go ahead. Fresh. Fresh means? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear it.
It means fresh out of new or different.
New or different.
Made, obtained, or experienced.
Made, obtained, or experienced.
Recently and not
recently changed. And not changed. So new and different, you know, coming up with new goals that are interesting, they're compelling, there's variety. So this is some of the ideas Prabhupada gave for managing a spiritual movement, and definitely book distribution. The book distribution movement is a spiritual movement. It requires the fuel of spiritual inspiration, which is really comes from hearing and chanting. And also principles to allow people to grow and express their individual spontaneous desire to help expand the distribution. So we should do huge. And now let's have some questions and we'll expand the conversation. Questions are hard, so if you don't want to ask a question, you can give a reflection. Reflections just mean anything that you heard that you could repeat back that you think is worthy of being repeated back so that it gets augmented. Does that sound fair? Thank you for bringing out the dictionary. It's not so important that you know everything, but it is important to know how to find everything. And also, it's a really good practice to look things up, like verses, words, concepts. Do research after you hear something. Don't be lazy. If you get in that zone where, you know, I'll do it later, I'll do it some other time, someone else will do it, then you miss out on a lot of growth. So I like how you were able to produce that really quickly. Keep things at fingertip, ready to research it and find it. Very good. All right, let's have some conversation and expansion. Like any of the pressing ideas, if you have questions for me about anything, I'll answer them. Or if you want to bring them up to others in the group. Yes?
Within the grihastha ashram, there's so many responsibilities.
Yes.
Sometimes
I can't find that I can balance my responsibilities.
Sometimes I find personally in my personal life that it's hard to balance the responsibilities with children as well as keep up.
It's hard to balance the responsibility with children as well as keep up
with book distribution, as well as inspire others,
meet our goals.
Yeah. So if you had some words of wisdom that we can think of every time we're feeling that dip.
Sure. Well, one thing is about balance is it's not a state that is completely static. It means that you have an ideal and you keep pulling back towards the ideal. And you're always processing. So allowing yourself to be off center and then coming back to center. So oftentimes we think that we have to be absolute center all the time, but it's not practical. Even if we did an experiment by standing up on one leg, shall we try it? Okay, go ahead. Okay, there's some show-offs in here. But I'll show you a trick in just a second. Okay, everyone, you just stand on one leg for a second and see how it feels. And notice that you're a little wobbly, right?
Yeah.
Oh, can you feel in your ankle that it's twitching back and forth, trying to hold you in place? It's moving, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, back down. Now, maybe try the other leg or go in the same one. Go up on one leg. Now close your eyes. Which one was harder?
First.
Was it harder with your eyes closed or open?
Open.
It was harder with them closed, right? Okay, well, let's sit down. So there's a couple of things. One is, when you're balancing, you're actually working at it. Like your body naturally does it because it's an amazing instrument. So on one leg, now you're going back and forth. Your muscles are like this way, no, that way, this way, that, pulling back. And the other lesson is you close your eyes and you have no point of reference. It's really easy to tip over. So the first part of balance really is having a clear goal in your life and keep reminding yourself what it is. Because then it helps to sort out all the different parts. Because one way in which we can feel despair in our life is we become so absorbed in all the little things that we have to do, and there seems to be no end to it. And if we don't have a clear idea that we're going somewhere and that we're doing it for a reason, then it becomes overwhelming. So keeping a clear goal, why are we doing all these things? And then knowing that it's okay to be off one way or another, as long as you know what that goal is and to pull back towards it. And another point is take time regularly to unclutter your life. Like, find out the things you don't really need, because there may be extra stuff. It grows up really fast in our lives, things that we're doing that take up time and energy and concern that we don't have to do. So it's okay at intervals to work together with the family or with your team and then trim back on things that you don't necessarily have to do. Those are a few thoughts, but give yourself time to process, you know, what you're doing. And also, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. So consider that, what are the foundational things that you do every day that make the most difference? Because there's only so much you can do in one day. And if you pick out a few activities that you know you can't do without, you won't survive spiritually or materially, and you make those things the most important, and make sure you get those done, even though there's this feeling like there's a million other things I'm not doing, you'll feel a little satisfied because you go, at least I did the main things. And you'll find the main things will get you through. For instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he talked to Sanatana Goswami, and he taught him about the limbs of devotional service, he said there's 64 limbs of devotional practice. And then he said there's 5 that are so potent that if you have a little association with these 5 on a regular basis, then you'll advance. And so he was constantly giving these ways in which to consolidate, like, what are the most important things. In fact, out of the 5, he said chanting Hare Krishna is the most important. From doing that, everything else gets done also. So that helps in staying balanced in your life, is take time to prioritize. It's a very healthy exercise at intervals to sit down with a pad and a piece of paper, like a legal pad and a pen, by yourself or with, you know, those that you live with and are working with, and just decide, what are the most important things in our life? What are the most important activities that we're doing? Are we doing enough of them? And when you do that, you readjust on a regular basis, and you'll feel this energy that comes out of that. Okay, we're together. We're working on the same things that are important. Those are a few ideas. Yeah, and you know, you're busy. It's a full-time task just taking care of a child, what to speak of doing all the other things as well. So manage your expectations. It's not that, because you're a very progressive person, anybody who, I mean, you're in a special category, you know, you've realized there's a spiritual goal in life, plus, you know, you're maintaining a lot of other things at the same time. So it's natural that you're going to be really busy. You know, CEOs, they get paid, you know, $200 million a year or something like that. But it's an onerous kind of job. I mean, there's people, they get calls in the middle of the night, 12 midnight, they've just gone to sleep an hour ago, and then somebody calls and say, you know, you're going to lose $20 million in Hong Kong if you don't get on this meeting right now, and they just have to do it. And that's the price to pay to, you know, to work at a high level in life. I'm not saying that we should sacrifice our sleep or anything like that, but I'm just saying that if you're going to, you know, live your life to the fullest and do a lot of stuff, you know, it's going to be demanding. And so that's there. Prabhupada's life was very demanding. He was always on call. He was always traveling. No one should be expected to keep up that pace, you know, throughout their lives. But if we want big things, we also have to make sacrifices. So there's a few ideas. Yeah, okay, you're welcome. Other thoughts or questions? Yes, Rishi Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
It's a nice class.
Oh, thank you.
One thing that I'm thinking about is, we're out on the streets and we're managing the whole program. We kind of get overwhelmed with the management, and we find that we've got
Sorry, I'm just testing the second mic.
Okay.
So we find that we've got less time to actually distribute the books.
Uh-huh.
So we're kind of thinking, oh, the devotees, you know, happy, are the devotees getting enough prasad? Are they being guided nicely?
Yes.
We're kind of really mindful of all these things. But then we kind of don't really get a chance to.
So Rishi Prabhu's talking about this conundrum as a manager. You know, behind the scenes, he's making sure everyone gets prasadam, he's organizing the spots, and then there's a kind of anxiety that, like, I'm not actually getting to go out as much and to distribute the books. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I'd be out there, supposed to be distributing books, but I'm worrying about everything else.
So, be out there, and supposed to be distributing books, but you're worrying about everything else. Well, welcome to the life of a manager. I mean, that's what managers do, they worry for everybody. It's a burden for sure, but it's really necessary. And there are different duties that people have. Some people have the luxury of not worrying about anything and just going out on book distribution. Somehow or other, for the major portion of my life, I was able to to do that. I didn't actually even assimilate into temples. I just basically, like, I got my own program. I go out on book distribution. And I didn't think about anything else except for distributing books and reading them. And of course, then I got roped in later on, which was kind of a natural progression. When I can reveal to you, when I first became a temple president, I got in so much anxiety because it's just one problem after the next that I had to deal with. And I thought it's because I'm messing everything up. And then after a while, I realized that's what management means, being kind of a lightning rod for all the problems and dealing with them. In any case, your question about, you know, balance between distributing and managing, you have to have managers who are overseeing the book distribution and all the dealing with all the behind the scenes things. And if you can also squeeze in a little time to go out and visibly be there on the front line distributing books, then that's also a nice service because it'll encourage everybody else and also fulfill your desire. But it's a service, actually, to take care of everybody when you're a manager. And that's kind of why you're here. When people hear the name Rishi, they think, okay, stability. And he's watching out for us, you know. And there has to be a Rishi behind every program where somebody's thinking about it. They're the one that he goes out last because they want to make sure everyone gets out the door and things like that. And Prabhupada once said that actually the position of the Sankirtan leader is the most desirable, which means, you know, you take all these responsibilities because that's where the rubber meets the road. The actual traction takes place there in the trenches when somebody's actually helping the devotees to go out. And it's a challenging service. But because you have the wherewithal to do it, Mahaprabhu's going to continue to call you to do things like that. And your devotional service will only be enhanced by cooperating and helping to expand like that. Especially when it's in relationship to organizing, you know, the hearing and chanting and the Sankirtan devotees going out. It's really important. Does that help? And then you can always sneak off and do some book distribution. Yes, Prabhu.
Do you think it's everybody that's able to be a manager?
Everyone that's able to be a manager should be a manager? Is that what you're asking? Is everyone able to be a manager?
Like, we have so many book distributors.
No.
Any of them become managers? Or?
Not necessarily. There's some devotees that don't think like that. They're not necessarily managers. They're more attuned to, working hard and doing, direct distribution and things like that. And they would like to be in that position. Some people think like managers, and they like to do that. You know, they emerge. Managers emerge. You know, when there's chaos, then you'll see one person steps up and goes, "No, no, put the table over here, not over here." You know, it's just like there's a manager. He just comes out, and from the thrust of book distribution, the movement of book distribution expanding for the sake of, you know, putting the sacred vibration all over the earth in written form, we find managers emerge. But not everybody's a manager, for sure. You have to find them, and they will reveal themselves through their activities. And like, yeah, I know how to do that. People do that. They'll raise their hand, you know, when a particular topic comes up. If it's building tables, you know, or a display, some, yeah, I can do that. Or accounting. Some people just like, yeah, I can deal with that. Management, I can deal with that. So different devotees have different skills. And if you engage them properly, then everything runs smoothly. You're welcome. Yes, Prabhu?
Yeah, so one question I had was, generally we try and develop these different areas,
Generally we're developing different areas, like departments, within the book distribution party.
Yeah, that's right. And one aspect, I mean, I find difficult is, I don't know, I mean, I try, but it's very difficult to acknowledge each and every one.
It's very difficult to acknowledge each and every one of the leaders.
And then generally I feel that, I mean, without acknowledging, people will come in, their little fires kind of built up within them. But if they don't have that constant and encouragement and acknowledgement.
And without getting the encouragement, then it's people, you know, they might lose that fire that they had originally. So what to do about that? Yeah, this is a point we noticed early on in our expansion at ISV. One thing, when we first started, we had these programs called Devotee Appreciation Day, or DAD, D-A-D. And what we tried to do, I think we did it about 3 years, and then we stopped doing it, and I'll tell you why we stopped doing it. When we get everybody together, the whole Sankirtan party, at first they all fit in one house, kind of like this, and we acknowledge everybody. And then the next year it got bigger, and we tried to acknowledge everybody at a big picnic and name everybody who did anything. And I remember one night I was driving home, Nirkul and I were going back from one of these programs, a DAD, and I was saying, why do I feel so terrible? All we were doing is glorifying devotees. And she said, I feel terrible too. And we started analyzing that you really can't acknowledge everybody at a big... First of all, you always fall short. There's always a sneaking feeling that I missed somebody, or I didn't say it quite right, or I forgot his wife's name, or something, like, you know, whatever it is, you're going to blow it. And you're just not satisfied. Devotees, on, you know, on a public level, they don't need that. Absolutely. We've found they don't need that. But as a manager, if you take time individually, whenever you see somebody putting out an effort, stop. Acknowledge it. Put both eyes on them and give them full attention for at least 60 seconds, and, you know, point out what they're doing right. This is actually, there was a book about this in the 1980s, or maybe the late 70s, it was called The One-Minute Manager. It's a thin book, anybody can read it, but he had this whole management theory, which is actually very effective, I found, and that manage by encouragement. And when you see, his phrase was, when you catch somebody doing something right, give them a 1 minute praising. You read the book? Give them a 1 minute praising, just appreciate what they're doing on the spot. And then he said, you don't actually have to reprimand anybody for not doing things right, because if they notice that you're not appreciating them, then they'll know, oh, I didn't do well enough. So I find it works better if you're always scanning the environment and looking for people doing, and even if it's just an acknowledgement on the fly that, very good, you're doing good service. You know, people become aware of the fact that you're aware of what they're doing and you're appreciating what they're doing. Yes, Prabhu.
In relation to Keshav Gokulanand Prabhu's point,
in relation to Keshav Gokulanand's point,
we are we've expanded over the last 1 year and branched out into many various projects.
We've expanded over the last year into various projects.
And The leaders are there, the teams are gradually growing in each of the areas. However, still, time to time, there is that stretch, you know, we feel, because earlier everybody was, say, working in Gomatsya and working on Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita.
But now there's a stretch, because people used to be working together on one or two projects.
And now, a prime example is over this year, we've kind of struggled in terms of working on our reception table, and a focus is, I mean, number of people have been less in that service.
So now, and as an example, on the reception table, we've, you know, the participation has become a little thinner.
Yes, and so we've reduced on the number of sets we do at the reception table at the manor. So what I'm trying to ask is, Primar, that how is it that although we are expanding, but yet we can work together and sort of help each other, and so that one doesn't feel that, oh well, I'm not moving as much as I was last year.
Well, in the management, you have to reassess what people are doing and be sensitive to whether they're engaged or not in the way they want to be engaged. So that requires being in touch with people and finding out if they've got enough engagement or too much engagement, and then adjusting it accordingly. And if you take time with people, one of the most important roles of leaders, besides what I said of catching them in the act, doing something right and appreciating, is taking a little personal time with people. You know, sit down and ask, you know, how are you doing? If you go to somebody's house and you sit down on the couch with them and say, you know, how are you all doing? They'll tell you a lot of stuff that they won't tell you when they're flying by you in the temple or something like that. And then the next time you see them, they'll be thinking, wow, he came over to my house, sat on the same couch, he was in our house, he cares. And, you know, they'll let you know kind of where they're at, what they need. And that's important. It takes extra time to do that, to spend time with people and find out how they're doing. But in the end, it takes much less time than having people just suddenly break away from their service and say, I can't do this anymore. It's like, what happened? Like, you know, I'm just overwhelmed. And you didn't know that because we just keep pushing. So as I said earlier, the individual devotees are important in the volunteer organization. And how we treat them is really the mainstay of our program. That's where the inspiration comes from. So you have to take time and find out how people are doing and what they need, rather than just assuming that it will go on. Yes?
Another question is, in order to keep the projects going... Well, so, for example, one of the... suggestion Guru Shakti Mataji gave a while ago, and I haven't been consistent with that, is that although we have different projects, that all the members, all the leaders, they come we choose one project every month, one day where everybody comes and works on that project. Say, everybody gets onto the phone and calls the prisons to find out which prisons will be happy to take the Bhagavad Gita and other books and places them.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day everybody walks up at the reception table and just we did it at Gomatsya, one of the festivals. But how do we get consistency going? Because it was such a great idea, but after a month I just didn't carry it forward.
Well, consistency is one of the hardest things to have in life, but to speak of in a you know, an organization. And you have to give yourself a little flexibility. I mean, sometimes consistency will last for 3 months, 6 months, a year, and then patterns change. You have to be a little flexible. You can't be rigid and say, we have to force consistency. And, you know, sometimes certain things, because they're artificially done, they just fall by the wayside anyway. Generally, the simpler things that actually work, that people like to do and can do, they develop the most staying power over time. And there is, you know, then you perceive consistency. And the other things that are just, they're too much for people. and you think, we should do this. And so you do it. And then you, you know, like, kind of force yourself to do it. But after a while, it's like, hey, nobody's here anymore. You might have yourself, you know, a kind of thing that it's just not going to fly. So you have to readjust and go back to, like, you know, what got us here in the first place, which things are most important and stuff like that. So a little flexibility helps. Don't try to make everything consistent, because it won't be. And even the other things, you know. I mean, there are certain things that you want to be consistent on, like especially the basic principles, like hearing and chanting. Be consistent as possible with that. And then other good things come from that. You're welcome.
We've been doing a lot of work with groups of people, Sangha groups, yeah? And especially with the 100K marathon, we did a really massive.
Yeah.
Every Sangha, we go and visit them, give them a training session, and encourage them to join in on the marathon. Because before that particular emphasis, there was nobody taking part in any participation in those sanghas. Yeah. So with that 100K, we said, okay, let's go out and really persuade them. And even after the event, we went and visit each sangha and give them a cake in appreciation. But to be honest, the uptake of that was still not as good as we would have liked. I think the comfort feeling of all these people attending their sanghas and hearing the lecture of the session and having prasadam once a month, that's it, yeah? And there's no other connections after that. So the whole, how do you encourage more enthusiasm? How do you persuade more of, these are devotees, regular devotees in that sense, and they're chanting and reading and all these kind of things, but they haven't got that fire to be able to engage in actually.
I feel your pain. Well, but let me just say, you know, say some truth, hopefully, and that is manage your expectations. If you're expecting too much from people, then you'll be disappointed. I've had this experience both in, you know, managing Sankirtan, and also I had a business for 10 years. And so, you know, I realized, you know, like I'd hold a meeting and even, you know, 100 people RSVP and 5 would show up. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, those, you know, I'm thinking about the 95 people. And I'm just in despair. It's like, why didn't they come? You know, or a worse mantra, why didn't anybody come? Meanwhile, there's 5 people who actually came. So then when I changed my way of thinking, I saw that, hey, these 5 people are here. And when you actually give your full attention to the 5 people, forget the 95 that didn't come, even though they RSVP'd. It doesn't mean anything anymore. And there are probably good reasons why they didn't, you know. But the fact is, 5 people are there. That's enough to take over the world, 5 people. 5 times 5 times 5 times 5, you got yourself a, you know, go with the willing. Put your love, energy, appreciation into the people who are actually there. You know, like people who actually want to be there. They're the ones that are going to stick in the end anyway. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Can lead a man to wisdom, but you can't make him think. I mean, there's all kinds of aphorisms everybody knows. You can't drag people over the finish line. So it's just like on Sankirtan, you look for the ripe fruits. And in building your party also, look for the people who step forward and say, I'm doing this, or this is my thing, this is what I do. I'm going to surrender to Lord Chaitanya. And that's who you want. And the other people, they can occasionally come, maybe once a year or, you know, every 6 months. Some people will do that, and that's great. Whatever they can do, it's individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. But it's enough. It's enough. And especially if you put your full attention into the ones who do come and appreciate. and the other kind of work that you do, going around individually meeting people, inspiring them, it'll never go in vain. And you never know also how much it's affecting them. It may be helping them in other ways in their lives, and it won't go in vain in the end. But the more you identify the people who are the 20%, who do the 80% of the work, and you give their attention to them, the more you'll feel a little more satisfaction also.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes?
So do you think book distributors will always be few and far between?
Will book distributors be few and far between? There's always, you know, Alfredo Pareto, he came up with this principle, the 80-20 rule. And things generally shake out. The masses, you know, you can start off with 100 people and it'll come out that 20 people out of the 100 are really dedicated and the other 80 people will be occasional. There is something like that. You can create an environment through inculcation in which a lot more people get involved in book distribution. And it is, it has a lot to do with the atmosphere that you create, the value that you create around it, and the training that you give people. And then more and more people can get involved. And in the end, however, you know, there some people will do, some people won't, but you can definitely increase the numbers. Like if there's a culture in any a given community that people like to go out together and have fun, and that's what they value, then they'll do it. And that takes a little work to create that. When I first came to ISV, you know, the community had started, but it was fledgling. And they asked me to come to a board meeting, which was like four or five devotees. It was just starting. And they wanted to know if I wanted to get involved. And I said, well, what's your plan? And they said, we want to build a temple. I said, well, then I'm not interested because I don't want to build a temple. I want to, and they said, well, what do you want to do? And I told them, they said, okay, let's do that then. Because, you know, it was a new community. and my point was, you know, from the very beginning, you know, we had this vision, mantras that, you know, if you engage in sankirtan and hearing and chanting, then Krishna will come and drop a temple on your head. And then one day he did. And we were all sitting there and it just came dropping down from the sky on our head. And we looked around and said, God, there's a temple around us now. But we didn't take our attention away from book distribution and things like that. So, you know, in creating that atmosphere, it takes framing. Because you either frame or you reframe. You frame what the reality is supposed to look like, or somebody else will frame it for you. But when you take the time to do that, then more people will get involved because it's part of the culture. Otherwise, people are always reframing things. I mean, there were some upstarts recently. When I was writing my book, I was actually got into a marathon mode and finished it because there were other people writing stuff saying that, you know, Prabhupada wasn't really into book distribution. He only wanted Harinam and distribute a few BTGs and stuff like that. It was off the wall. I mean, absolutely crazy stuff, but that's what happens. And unless you define, you know, what kind of mood and method is coming down through the parampara, then someone else will say something else and say, no, it should be like this. And then you have to live with it. So if you want reality to be a certain way, you got to work at it. I mean, reality is a certain way. That's what reality is. But if you want to, you know, if you want to create an environment in which people can enact that reality, you have to work at it. That was a really long answer to a simple and short question, but I thought it was necessary to bring out a few of those points.
I have another question.
Yes. In my view, what are the reasons that people, that devotees don't want to come forward and distribute on a consistent basis?
Especially based on the fact that Srila Prabhupada emphasized
especially based on the fact that Srila Prabhupada emphasized it. Well, let me tell you one thing. In the 1970s, when Prabhupada was personally emphasizing it, in both in his letters, in his books, in his lectures and things, there were people that, you know, were holdouts. And they had seemingly perfectly good reasons. You know, like, human beings are resourceful when it comes to finding excuses and, you know, creating their own ideas. So that's always been going on. And the other thing is, I find really, considering that, you know, in good faith, everyone wants to do what Prabhupada says, there are ways in which people become afraid of doing book distribution because they're not sure what's going to happen when they do it. I mean, there's a sense sometimes people think that of the unknown, a fear of the unknown. If I go out, somebody's going to reject me. This is one of the key things. In the minds of devotees, they're thinking, I'm going to go out, I won't know what to say, and someone's going to tell me, go take a hike. You know, and what will I do then? I'll be devastated. The fear of being rejected is really, really strong in people. And so you have to take that off the table. So, for instance, when I go and start an MSF in a new place, I emphasize over and over and over again that we're not going out to distribute books. And people look rather shocked. It's like, thought you came here to teach us how to distribute books. And I say, that's not why we're here. We're here to see if we can go from this one place out to the spot and just touch the pavement. And then we're done for the day. And you don't have to do anything else to prove yourself. All you have to do is join with the troop movement and move out of this place and not get diverted and go home because your mom needs a peanut butter and jelly sandwich at the last minute. And, you know, you just have to just go and then you're done. And the more you lower the bar and tell people that they're not expected to perform, and the more you tell them how to actually present and that there's a systematic way of doing it and showing them what to do if they are rejected or something like that, then the more they're willing to participate. Those are some of the main reasons. There are other reasons as well. Yes, Nirgula?
I think too that, as Prabhu said, some people, there are many reasons, but some are just afraid to go out. But almost everybody who is in ISKCON knows how much book distribution means to Srila Prabhupada. So if they can't go out on Sankirtan, they're usually more than willing to do something to support Sankirtan, whether it's donating to sponsor books or do the driving or make the prasadam or something. So there's a whole, what do you say? There's always employment or?
jobs. Yeah, there's lots of ways people could, maybe they're not inclined to just go out and distribute books, but when you make the program all-inclusive, that everyone's service counts. So at ISV, we always presented for many years that there are four ways you can get involved. You can go out and try it yourself, book distribution, or you can give money so that other people can go out and do it. Or you can help with backup services like cooking, stamping books, doing all these things. Or you can just be an advocate. Even if you can't do those other three things, just advocate it and say, yeah, this is a good thing. And smile when people are going out the door and wave. And that and if you say it all counts, it's all good, then people feel included and they'll want to be part of the culture. And not everybody has to go out. Other people have to help with backup and things like that. Does that help? I was going to say there are other reasons why sometimes people don't go out. And they, you know, one reason is because they don't have, they're not getting nice instruction. They're not taking the time to read Prabhupada's books and experiencing what it feels like to get an infusion of transcendental instruction directly from the author. Because when you do that and you feel edified by reading the books, then there's a tendency to have a lot of faith in giving them to other people. And sometimes devotees hear things like, oh, Prabhupada's books are not relevant or there are things in Prabhupada's books that are so caustic that it'll just offend everybody. So then they get this little thing in them where they think that, oh, you know, I can't distribute Prabhupada's books because what will people think? And mostly that's because they don't read them. They're like, they take isolated ideas from various parts of Prabhupada's books, not in its entirety, but just little things that to them don't seem relevant or may seem even offensive to the modern reader. And then they get on, they develop this aversion, and they may not even say anything about it, but they're just like, that's okay, I don't want to do it, because they don't have, they're not being nourished by the book itself. And so that's another reason why. And another reason is sometimes people get this idea that book distribution is not relevant. So for instance, somebody say, well, you distributed so many books, where's the result? And then they'll think, like, what's the use? That's why I went out of my way to write the book, Our Family Business, and to include in it evidence that the pen is mightier than the sword, that various ideologies have been embedded in society through inculcation, especially through writing, and especially through the distribution of literature. I give, you know, anecdotal evidence for that. And also, you know, you can see that on an individual basis, there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of known cases, known to us, of people who have gotten books and their lives have been, you know, they've had conversion experiences from reading the books. And from that, you can extrapolate, there are millions of other cases we don't even know about when people they've had that effect. I just wrote the introduction to Vijay Prabhu's new book, which is basically a catalog of experiences that people have had by, you know, distributing the book, somebody reading it, and then how it's changed their life. And there are so many. There are hundreds, thousands. But those are only the ones we know about. The rest of them, every time somebody gets a book, there is an effect, directly or indirectly, the effect is there. So my point is, in answering your question, is that some people, they talk themselves out of it, and they say, oh, actually, book distribution is not such a good strategy. But I disagree, and I can prove it through history that it is a good strategy. Book distribution is efficacious, and it's powerful, even on a secular level. People figure out that if we distribute literature, then it will have a systemic effect on society. And so that's another reason that sometimes people hesitate. They just don't think it's important. They've not been inculcated in such a way to have that value, that it's important. So that's part of the internal preaching of the book distribution movement, is to let people know this is important. In fact, I was on a party just after I joined Krishna Consciousness, that was directly under Srila Prabhupada. We were called the BBT Party, and Prabhupada wanted a party that would go out and teach this to all the devotional communities. So we were about 25 brahmacharis, and all we did was we were embedded in various ISKCON temples around, mostly around North America, but some went around the world to other places. And we were there to talk about the importance of book distribution and just to train others and to go out on book distribution regularly. Otherwise, you know, it's easy enough just to not do it. It's like, you know, unless you have a reason to do it, unless you think it's going to work, and unless you're reading the books and you think everyone should have these, then why would you take the trouble? So that's one of the ways in which people can be held back. Yet another way that people can be held back is they haven't heard or appreciated what the books are and what distributing them means. Does that help? Okay. Yes.
So in relation to the monthly Sankirtan festivals, this year I would say we've started doing Shravanadi Jal at the beginning of each month and getting an elevated devotee to speak on a certain topic.
Mm-hmm.
But in my view, I think the numbers haven't really expanded and it's really the same amount of devotees that are coming out and the same devotees. So we market it by sending out flyers on WhatsApp,
mm-hmm.
which is circulated, and in the temple. And I'm thinking, is it a matter of just being patient, or do you think there's any other innovative ideas that we can implement to try to increase the numbers?
Yes, I do. One thing is, just as far as percentages goes, when you send out electronic invitations, is one of the least effective ways to get people to participate in something. Because it's really easy to ignore, because so many things come in electronically. That's one of the reasons I did it in my business, and I've done it in some of the ways dealing with inviting people, sending postcards, picture postcards with an actual signature and message on the back. The more personal you make the invitation, the more likely people are to come. And we have always found the best way to guarantee that people come to an event is to pick them up in your car and bring them yourself. So if the people, it really is true, because here's a formula that is very accurate. If people say they're going to try to come, that means they're definitely not coming. And if people say they're definitely coming, they might come. But if you pick them up in the car or say, I'll come pick you up at 10, 10 a.m., then they'll let you know ahead of time whether they're coming or not. It's because, oh, well, that's all right. I'll come myself. And it's like, all right, you're not coming. I get it. Click, you know. But if they say, sure, you can pick me up, then you know they're coming. So, the more personal you are. And also, there are formulas we've found. If the more fun it is, if you're making it fun. And so people just asked me recently, because I said that in another place, what's fun? I said, what's fun is prasadam. I mean, that's one of the big things. If you have prasadam that is like catches, they're having what? Are we going to have pizza for everybody? Like, okay, yeah, I'll think about coming. Make the prasadam like a major feature, like beautiful cupcakes. Who could refuse a cupcake? I mean, it's like they're award-winning cupcakes at the end. Or whatever it is, if it's fun on the prasadam side, then living entities, if an ant finds out there's a grain of sugar at the top of a skyscraper building, he'll be there in 5 minutes. So that's one thing. Yes?
Having the temple authorities talk about it, make announcements about it, that it's not just coming from the Sankirtan leaders, but it's got to come from the temple management as well, that they're behind this.
Yeah, a word from the top makes a big difference. And you said you're bringing luminaries out with you on the MSF?
So we have Shravanani Jal a month before, where the speaker will...
Okay, Shravanani Jal. Well, what we found also, if you can enlist a well-known personality to come out. I was in New York a couple weeks ago, or whenever I was there, a month ago for the MSF, and I wrote a note to Radhanath Maharshi. He happened to be in town, and I said, Maharshi, if you could come out even for 5 minutes, it'll make a difference. And he's so thoughtful. He made an arrangement and he came out. And it spoke volumes. If there's anybody that has any kind of leadership value, and you can recruit them ahead of time, and then you'd advertise it. Guess who else is coming out? It makes a big difference. And they have to come out is for a photo op. They don't have to hit the pavement and distribute books. They just have to stop by. They swing by the table, get out of the car, take a photo with a few devotees, and they can go home. And that'll make all the difference in the world. That helps too. Memorable prasadam and things like that. You're welcome.
So everybody please buy 7-seater or minibuses. Trade your cars in for 7-seaters or 9-seaters.
Yes, Prabhu.
So just in relation to what you say, that regardless of the results, you still have to continue, like, in relation to Guru Shakti Baba's...
Regardless of the results, you still have to continue?
So I'm just trying to see if you're doing mass distribution in a city or area, is it conclusive that people will join that center? So can we judge how many devotees actually, how many people do become devotees? Or is that sort of a time kind of lapse?
No, that's important. And it helps to develop a holistic program. When you're doing book distribution, if you take time to consider how is it that a person who becomes attracted to the principles in the book will be accommodated. Because then when you have follow-through, your program's definitely going to expand, and also it has more purpose to it. So it is something to take time and look at where are the gaps. For instance, you know, let's say somebody gets a book and they're a beginner, they're very interested in Krishna consciousness. What program do you next have to offer them tomorrow if they want to be involved? And you say, oh, come to the Sunday program. That won't work, probably. It's too big of a leap. You know, they'll fall into this chasm. So, you know, look at where the gaps are and fill them up. And the more you do that, and the closer you get to having ways in which to accommodate the people who first get the first contact and they show some interest, now what's the next, very next thing for them to do? And if you have those things in place, then you'll, besides distributing a lot of books, you'll make a lot of devotees. It's been done before in various eras in ISKCON when there was a lot of attention to this and the people were in place who were ready to take care of the people who first came. And there was a habitat. Every species has to have the right habitat to survive. So when you take time to create the habitat and the kind of, which includes the kind of training, the kind of environment that these people need, then you'll make devotees also. And that'll be very nice too, especially when you're self-determining and you have a way to take care of these people when they first come, they can be assimilated into the Sankirtan movement as well. And people who first come to Krishna consciousness can be oriented towards Sankirtan and the mission of Sankirtan. I was not joking, but I brought up the point about how at our Sunday program, we used to have an intermission and then we'd invite everybody to come out for like an hour at the Sunday program. You know, we'd say like, anybody here, even newcomers, like, you want to go on door-to-door book distribution? A lot of people would go. And after, on the break there at our seminar the other day, one of the devotees came up to me and she said, you know, I actually went to a meeting with the Jehovah's Witness and they do that. She said, I was a new person there and we had some sharing from the Bible and stuff like that. And then they said, okay, let's all go out. So you can create that. But yes, follow-up programs and how to accommodate what's the next step for people. It's very important.
The reason I ask is generally, I mean, my mindset is that mass distribution works. So, I mean, regardless, follow-up is definitely needed. But regardless of that, I think generally some like senior disciples or kind of in leadership, they say that we need to develop more of the follow-up now because we've done enough of mass distribution. But I still think that
mass distribution, yeah. You'll never hear me saying that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in and of itself, book distribution is a sacred activity, and you'll see it for yourself when you're there. Because the people that you touch when you're on the street or door-to-door or anywhere else, there's an indelible effect where you can see that actually, God, I made contact. And you know for yourself, I mean, like, we were in Toronto and we went to this, deliberately went to a Arabic-speaking apartment building. And there were all these kind of really very religious people into Islam and stuff like that. And so many of them took the books into their house. And the interactions we had with each and every one of them were so moving. Some of them, one of the doors we went to, and they opened the door, and the woman was kind and everything like that. The man was just staring into the television set. He knew we were there, but he wouldn't even look at us. We got on our knees and we said, you know, we're not moving until he comes over. And anyway, there's a long story behind that, but the end result was that he ended up giving $50 and buying a book. And there was this epiphany, you know, in his life that took place. And you see that when you go in book distribution. Every book that's distributed is consequential. It's not just a number, it's an interaction that devotees share their faith individually with people when they distribute a book. So I believe in mass distribution. But there, it's not that we have to stop the mass distribution in order to, you know, now transition into follow-up. Both can go on at the same time. And my feeling is that we're not really doing mass distribution yet. We haven't hit that threshold where we can say we're doing mass distribution. We have a hint of book distribution going on in the world right now. There's a few Bhagavad Gitas going out, a few, very few magazines, a few sets. You know, we're getting up in some numbers, 7,000 or whatever it was for that Vajrapurnima. But that's just, it's just like an indication of what can be done. We want to be looking in the millions and not the tens of thousands, but the millions. And then we can start saying we're doing mass distribution. And when we do that, the results will be obvious. I agree with you, the more we increase. But we should be able to manage the results of our outreach also. That's responsible. Because more and more people will come, and then what are you going to do with them? And it is a fact that people, when they first come, they are, first of all, they're malleable. How you treat them, how you help to guide them is very important. It's just like a young plant. And they can be broken really easily too. If you don't water them enough, if you don't give them the right environment, enough light, they can just die. And, those who are gardeners know, when the plants are young, you have to protect them. In our bhakti programs, I remember in New York, Urjaswat Prabhu was one of the masters of making new devotees. We had a 340 West 55th in Manhattan. We had that big building. And one of the floors was all dedicated to new people. And they were sequestered. Means they stuck with the bhakti leaders. Nobody else in the whole temple could talk to them. They'd come down as a group, they'd go to Mangal Arati, but no one else was allowed to talk to them because, you know, they'll get messed up. People come up and say, like, no, you should do it like this, blah, blah, blah. And then next thing you know, they're ruined. But we made, you know, dozens, hundreds of new devotees when there was some thought put into it. So we should do both. But you might have missed that part. I said, we're not doing mass distribution yet.
I did hear a bit.
Okay. We're thinking about it. There's some indications that we're doing a few books here and there, but I wouldn't count it as massive yet. We need to get the big, big numbers, and we should be thinking about that, how to cover the earth with transcendental literature.
Regarding mass distribution, yes. Traveling Sankirtan, I know that used to be very big. Like
traveling Sankirtan is really important.
How can we do as Grihastha? How can we?
Well, traveling Sankirtan as Grihasthas is you can take some time on, when you can afford it, and then travel and stay overnight somewhere and then come back. You get that experience. Our devotees do that sometimes, our Grihastha devotees. You can take the kids too. Instead of going camping, you can do on book distribution. Or you can camp too, you know, make it fun. We're going camping and on the way we can do this. A lot of Grihasthas do that when they... You know, they'll go somewhere fun, and along the way, they'll do some book distribution. And it makes it like a glorious, instead of going to see the mouse at a, you know, like, big deal, you saw the mouse. That's Mickey Mouse. All right, go see the mouse, but along the way, distribute books. And it becomes actually a sacred journey.
Yatras are a good example.
At Jagannath Puri, you know, we've had, seven or eight yatras, and after about three of them, some people came and they complained, why isn't the room nicer, and blah, 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 and it's like, that's not why we're here. So then we started branding our yatras, like, this is a Sankirtan yatra. We're coming here to do Sankirtan. And you know, in Puri, in the last 3 years, each year we've distributed in 5 days 5,000 books, and it's like it turns the yatra into this. There's a whole other dimension to it. The devotees go crazy for book distribution in the Dham, and they're all over the place distributing books and prasadam and Jagannath stickers. And so, you know, you can do that when you travel. I know our Sri Krishna Purushottam, he's always, whenever he has to travel for work, and wherever he goes, as soon as he gets on the plane, you start getting pictures back, you know, on the WhatsApp group. There he is with the pilot, you know, just bought a set of books, and here he is with the customers, you know, in line and sitting in the seats. You know, he's distributing books wherever he goes.
I think what Prabhu said, I mean, that's very important because, you know, in our bhakti rikshas, we do have quite a lot of people now.
Yes.
And if each and every one of them did go out, you know, that would be really great. But
yeah.
Kind of inspire some of them.
Yeah.
And I think some, like, we did it, of course, in December, you know, during book marathon. But Prabhu does, you know, every month, you know, what we need, because if you don't do it every month, then, you know, they're going to lose it.
That's true.
December,
yeah.
Cannot prepare for it.
Right.
So, like, then you know, we started going, but there's only a few numbers. It's always a few regular people who go out. So, how to kind of inspire others? It's just that, like you said, you know, some people are kind of scared because, you know, they don't know what the outcome is going to be. Or
yeah.
If they don't distribute a book, it's like, I don't know how to do it. But maybe if you can share some ideas how to kind of inspire them and.
Yeah, well, what you said is important. If you, first of all, whatever the program is the program. That's what all people know is what the program is. If they come into the program and it's like, what do you do here? It's like, we get together, we hear and chant, and then we go out. And then they go, okay, that's the program. So they just do it. And the other part is, you know, if people are going to go out, don't put too much pressure on them. Make it really easy and just, like, it's good enough just to walk out the door and see what it's like. And then also train people. You know, how do you do this? And if you do it like that, and you go out just for a little while to start with, you know, don't push and don't make goals and all those kind of stuff. The only goal is, like, we're just going out to do the right thing. People start to get their own taste for it. They'll develop a taste for it. So you just have to develop the culture. And people will join it. Personally, I think all the bhakti vrikshas and all the home programs should have an element of missionary spirit, because otherwise people just get bored, or they're not getting enough oxygen. The oxygen comes when they go out and they see for themselves what it's like to distribute a book and how people are interested and things like that, and then they bring that back in. Then the hearing and chanting becomes a lot more effective. Yeah, the missionary spirit's important. Yeah, thank you very much. That was our call for prasadam, I can tell. The tone of the voice, that was it. Like, enough's enough, you know.
I just wanted to share something on this note. I think there were some really good questions. Everybody came and it was a good churning today. I just want to share with you that there may be many challenges we are facing right now, but there is actually enough to celebrate the success we've had. And I'll give you an example. Myself, Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu, we're serving at the temple, a Sankirtan service. Prabhu is in the festival committee. We've been approached on a few occasions by Gauri Prabhu, the managing director, and the recent was where he invited me and he asked a question that, how is it that you were able to do what you guys are doing? I mean, you have children, you have everything, and I see all these projects are coming up, and every day somebody sends me a picture, and how is it happening? Do you think the future is congregation for the manor? I mean, he's asking me the question, you know? Nobody, and I'm saying, yes, it is, because that's what is happening all over the world. And equally, you know, and he's asking the question, well, in that case, do you have a recommendation for a temple president from the congregation? I said, absolutely, I can give you many, that's not a problem. So all I'm trying to say with this point is that there is, nothing is going unnoticed, and the temple leader sees that, how this service of Sankirtan is uniting people together in the community, and there's always already a good energy. And those who have the ability to appreciate and see that actually this can do a lot of damage to the city and to where we live, they're seeing it and appreciating it actually. And I think last year Marathon Effort was a big example of and all the devotees who participated, they were wowed, you know, it was really huge for everybody. So I just want to say that what all of you are doing, it may seem tiny, but actually it's not. It's having a lot of effect on the community, and the leaders at the temple are really appreciative of the service. And this is what is going to inspire everybody to come to take to this service. And it will happen because it's Mahaprabhu's prediction. You know, Vaisheshika Prabhu speaks about it wherever he goes, that, you know, we can just become an instrument and see it all unfold in front of us. It is definitely going to happen. There's no doubt about it, actually. I just wanted to share those concluding remarks.
That was really good balance, because I was starting to get off and we're not doing mass distribution. But I think it isn't, this point is always vital in management. It's easy to look and see the deficiencies and what we're not doing yet. And when we're forward looking and there's room for unlimited expansion, then there's room for unlimited dissatisfaction too, because of, like, there's a void out there to fill and you're never going to fill it all. So I like what Divyanand Prabhu is saying, that it's important to celebrate what we're already doing now. You feel a little bit of angst for, you know, increasing in the future, but right now, see that, you know, this is remarkable what's already going on, and it really is. Thank you. Good point.
So we'll conclude now. We are very blessed. Actually, not only do we have association of such senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada, but they're carrying something very, very special for us all the way, well, from Mayapur to San Francisco and from San Francisco to London. So it's something extremely special for all of you. I will now request Guru Ma to hand over the sweets, and Guru Ma could hand over this. I'll actually say, can I say more? Okay. So last year we had a Panchatattva Maha Abhishek. And if you all remember, we were trying to really push on Chaitanya Charitamrita set and get some Maha. And I messaged Guruma and she tried, and we found out actually there was some Maha which we did get. And it is the cloth of Nityananda Prabhu who wore it, he was wearing it on that day of the Abhishek actually. So that cloth, they will be giving, Guru Maharaj will personally hand it over to all of you, and Guruma has some sweets for all the leaders. So please come forward one by one, and somebody should take a picture because it's in a momentous occasion. So if we could ask, maybe we can start with, we'll start with our...
Marman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, hey! Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman.